Thank you, Ramey. So for those that couldn't hear us, we've done our roll call and agenda approval. We did the prior minutes.
We have a motion on the table.
So there's a motion on the table for the prior minutes for May 19,
2023. This is Alpert. I'll second.
All right. Any discussion on minutes?
Prior minutes.
Any objection to adopting the minutes? Hearing and seeing none, the minutes are adopted for May 19th. That brings us to public comments. For those wishing to make a public comment, please, 2 minutes per person, state your name clearly and affiliation if you have one. Randy, let's look online. Is there anybody online wishing to make a public comment?
If there are any members on the line that wish to make a public comment, please press *9 now on your phone. You will be recognized in the order that you call. Please clearly state your name and affiliation if you have one.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, members of the board.
Chair, there are no members on the line right now.
Thank you. Is there anybody in the conference room wishing to make a public comment? Hearing and seeing none, I will close the public comment section. That brings us to item number 6, new business, the calendar report. Now you're up.
Sorry about that. Jumped the gun. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We have Alex Ford from Callan to make a presentation update. And, Alex, I looked at your presentation, and I'm hoping that either at the end of it or before it, you could make a brief comment to the board about how much of a difference in dollar returns through time can occur from even minor but significant adjustments in the equity versus fixed income mix. I'm looking back at a presentation you provided in August of 21 about the returns, historic returns for ADA, and then projected what those returns would have been if there was even a 25% allocation to an equity investment. But if you want to, I don't know when you want to talk about that, briefly at the beginning or the end, but I think it'd be helpful for the board to hear that.
Sure thing. Good morning, everyone. ADA board members, pleased to be with you today. Terribly sorry, for whatever reason, my video is not.
Can you increase the volume?
Yes, please let me know that you can all hear me.
Turn it up a little bit.
Try again, Alex.
Great, thank you. So can you all hear me clearly now?
Yeah.
Much better.
Okay, wonderful. And I was just saying, you know, my apologies for whatever reason, my video function is not, I couldn't get it to work this morning. You know, hopefully you all have the presentation in front of you. I'm happy to share it on screen as well, if I can be granted permission to do that through Teams. But if not, you know, I'm happy to just call out the pages that we plan to hit. And we're going to walk through a pretty high-level review of the investment program. I'll take a stab at that question at the outset about different approaches to asset allocation and how that may translate into dollars. So just briefly, at the request of the board back in 2021, we looked at some hypothetical other asset allocations with increasing amounts of equity and just did a kind of brief back test to see what performance could have conceivably looked like through time. Now, obviously, over a long investment horizon, we expect equities to outpace bonds. Over the last decade, we've had some pretty phenomenal calendar years. So certainly, increasing equity in the portfolio over a long investment horizon will be expected to translate into higher dollar earnings. But the big caveat with that is that that comes with massively increased volatility. We're in a perfect test case right now with 2022 in the rear view. Markets sold off dramatically, that really hampered the ability to fund projects in that time frame. So, that's a question that we've been wrestling with staff and the board is, what's the appropriate asset allocation? It's really tough to just pick a number. As your advisor, we're happy to kind of undergo an asset allocation study that would look at alternative scenarios and look at not just expected return, but risk and what how that translates into expected outcomes. So let me just stop there. It's tough to say, you know, with any certainty because we're also looking at very different market environments in 2021 versus 2022, certainly. But I'm happy to answer any questions on asset allocation approach.
Thanks, Alex. Sorry, Chair, this is Randy, Executive Director. Alex, just to put it in context for the Chair and the Board a little bit, it looks like it was roughly a 30% increase in earnings over a 10-year period, roughly 15-year period, with a 25% equity mix.
Yes, that certainly sounds reasonable through the end of 2021, without a doubt. Now, that was very point-in-time estimate. You know, if you were to have fast-forwarded and we did that analysis at the same time in 2022, obviously the results would be markedly different. So it's a bit tough to just pick any one calendar year, but yes, through that period, it certainly would have translated into higher rates.
Thank you, Alex. Please go forward.
Okay, great. So, you know, I'm unable to share screen through Teams. Hopefully you all have this either up on screen or in front of you.
Alex, we have it on screen. If you just tell me the page numbers, I'll flip up here.
Okay, great. Thank you. So we're going to start on page 4. You know, we just want to hit a couple of highlights as a review. Please stop me along the way if there are any questions or you want to delve in deeper. But on page 4, this is just a nice overview of how the investment fund itself is structured. You know, as you're all well aware, comprised of the Enterprise Development Fund, the internally managed portfolio, really there to meet immediate expenditure needs. And then the remainder of the portfolio managed by two external fixed income managers, Alaska Permanent and Barrow Hanley, at the bottom of the table. Both of those managers are what you would call core bond managers. They follow a very conservative approach. Their primary goal is safety, capital preservation, and liquidity. And they have provided that through time to aid quite well, so they've met that objective. A couple other comments we just want to make on this page. You can see the change in value over the course of the quarter. So this is the first quarter of 2023. It increased in market value of approximately $20 million, driven mostly by positive investment return. So a nice change from what 2022 threw at us. And then the remainder was the net new investment, so cash flowing into the Enterprise Development Fund. The last comment we want to make on this page is that you'll notice the pie chart. So the allocations between the Enterprise Development Fund and the pair of external managers fluctuates through time. It's currently 37% enterprise, 63% allocated to your external managers. That will obviously have a big impact on the returns that you generate because the Enterprise Development Fund is much shorter duration, much more cash-like in nature, so as expected, does not generate as significant returns as your external managers are expected to. Any questions on any of that information before we jump ahead and look at performance?
Randy, could you show the presentation is not showing up on Teams?
And Randy, I'm going to be on page 7 going forward.
Bill, can you see that now?
Yes. Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Alex.
John.
Are you there still?
Can you all hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yes, Alex, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Yes, yes, I was going to ask you. I don't see the presentation on screen, so just let me know if I should continue or wait. There it is. Great. Thank you. And so, Randy, yes, page 7, you know, at the request of the board, again, we have two ways of looking at performance. The prior pages are gross of fee returns. Page 7 and 8 look at your net of fee performance. So accounting for the investment management fees you pay to your external managers. A couple of quick comments we want to make. Of course, this is very, very point in time specific. And that's important. This is as of the end of March. Because you'll notice deep negative or red returns over the last year and last 3 years. What that's reflecting, of course, is the historically bad return year for fixed income in 2022. Right? We saw the most dramatic increase in rates in 40-plus years, runaway inflation, that had a big negative impact on bond portfolios. We're going to take a look at longer-term performance in a second. But at the top of the page, the Enterprise Development Fund, you'll notice, you know, through time, its net returns have, you know, done a decent job, slightly outpacing cash benchmarks, right? And so that's really been its objective, relatively low-returning portfolio, but tremendous liquidity at hand to meet your expenditure needs. And so it has generated some return, but also really provided that much-needed liquidity. Whereas the external manager at the bottom of the page historically and expected through time generate more return. But of course, over the last year, last 3 years, last 5 years, that was not the outcome given dramatically rising interest rates. And just remember that as rates and yields move higher, bond prices consequently move lower, and that led to these negative total returns that we're seeing. We do temper kind of that bad news of the prior year with the good news that going forward, yields today are so much higher than they've been in the past 15-plus years that your expectation for return from fixed income is much rosier and much higher. And your going-in yield is a really good indicator of what you'd expect to earn, you know, over the coming years. So that is a much positive development.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Alex, for this presentation. Thank you, Randy, for bringing this to our attention. Are you able to provide Randy with a investment fund performance inclusive of your fees, of all fees, instead of net of fees?
Well, yes. So this page that you're looking at reflects the payment of all of the fees to your external investment manager. So it's performance earned after having paid for those fees. So it's a bit lower than on the preceding pages, which are gross, so before fees. And so you can kind of look at the difference in terms of the headwind that the fee payments generate. Now, what is not reflected in this number is Callan's fee as your advisor. That's just a flat dollar fee. It's $39,400. And whereas your external managers are compensated on a percent of assets.
Yeah, I do see the gross fees. However, the it's not comparing apples to apples. It's last 7 years, last 10 years, last 15 years, and then net is last quarter, fiscal year to date.
Yeah, you know, you got to look at page, five.
Okay.
The same time frame as seven. Right? And so page five is the gross over those time frames. Page seven is the net over those time frames. And the difference is the C payment, or, you know, that's the headwind, that you're encountering there. So the net numbers will, of course, always be a bit lower than the gross numbers after having accounted for those fees.
Thank you.
And so, you know, this is, again, I just keep hammering point in time specific, because if you were to run this report at a different point in time, obviously the results look very different. We're going to see what a longer-term view looks like in a moment. What we did add in here is CPI all-urban index, so at the bottom of the page, because there is a lot of question, understandably so, about what is the real return generation over time, not just the nominal return, but how are you doing versus inflation. And so we can see that through the end of the first quarter, total results, you know, have not been able to keep pace with inflation over the near term through this specific point in time. Okay? And then we can see why. Now, if we look on page 8, with a longer-term view, again, net numbers, you'll notice that if you go out last 15 and 20 years, total fund results are in excess of inflation. So we are in this environment of, you know, highest inflation in decades. Over the near term, it's been, you know, nearly impossible to outpace that. But over the long term, the results do, you know, look good on a real basis. So you're not losing purchasing power. And I think the most important illustration of this that we can show you is on page 9. Now, this is a cumulative view, and so this is helpful because we think it strips away any time period-specific issues. Okay, so this goes back 20 years and looks at how is the fund done through time relative to inflation. So the tan bar at the bottom is inflation. The blue bar in the middle is the total investment fund, and the green bar is just the external managers alone. And what you can see is through time, through the most recent period, the investment fund has done quite a good job outpacing inflation, both on a total basis and as the external managers, you know, as a group. And so when you look at it through this lens, we think that, you know, this is a way to assess performance, assess outcomes, and this bodes well for the work that's been done by the investment fund over the last 20 plus years, generating real return after inflation. Are there any questions about that information before we push ahead and just look at the manager specifically? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to jump to page 10 and 11. And this is just a little bit more of a under-the-hood look at your external management portfolios. And I think it's just important to understand what's going on, how they're approaching risk, and how they're generating return. And so, briefly, at the top, you'll see the box that is labeled duration. In other words, that's their sensitivity to changes in interest rates. And importantly, for less than permanent, 6.09, that closely follows the benchmark at 6.33. You'll see the same picture for Barrow Hanley, and that's important because they're not taking big bets on interest rate direction. Right? Similarly with quality at the bottom, you'll notice that these are very high quality portfolios, investment grade, not taking a lot of credit risk or exposing ADA to potential losses through write-downs, defaults, and the like. So that's what we mean when they're conservatively oriented. They are generating real return but without taking significant risk and near-term loss and volatility. And then just on the chart on the right, you'll notice how they're allocated across these various sectors. And the important distinction is for Alaska, permanent, at the top, U.S. Treasury and government-related just below that. That makes up over 65% of their total portfolio. So very liquid, some of the highest safety assets, you know, out there in the universe. And so you give up a little bit in return, but you really have a focus on capital preservation that, that helps you over the long run. And on page 11, the other manager, just kind of confirming what I said, similar story with Alaska. The distinction is that they take a little bit more credit risk. So you'll see the sector allocation chart on the right, their allocation to corporate credit higher than what Alaska Permanent has, again, by design. So they are a nice complementary pairing of managers, but still well within investment grade limits, tracking the duration of the benchmark. And again, so this kind of conservative orientation, which we think has boded well over time for the investment. So we want to stop there and happy to answer any questions about either the market environment, the investment fund, the external managers, or whatever pleases the board. So that concludes, you know, our prepared remarks on performance. If there is interest on pages 13 and 14, we do have just some high-level market and economic overview. The reason we include that is because it kind of influences the returns that you're seeing. If you think we've covered that enough, we don't have to hit those pages, but we're happy to if the board is interested.
Any questions from the board? All right.
Great. Well, thank you all very much for your time today, and look forward to seeing you all in person again at the next opportunity.
Thank you. Okay. Brings us to item B under new business, which is executive session related to matters to be acknowledged which would be clearly have an adverse effect on the public. Finance of the public entity, which was, what is the executive session about?
Mr. Chair, the executive session is going to cover some financial recommendations that tie into the Callan presentation. We've got some,
all right, I need a list to put on the record.
Sure.
Should be under this, just so that people can see what the subject matter is. All right, so the executive session is going to cover personnel, litigation, project updates, which includes Ambler Road, Mustang, Red Dog Mine, FedEx Hangar. So we have a finance update, legislative proposals. I think that's the subject matter. Is that correct, Randy?
That's correct.
All right. So I'll entertain a motion for that.
This is Bill Kendig. I move the board go into executive session to discuss matters listed in Alaska Section 44-62-310C, which includes matters the immediate knowledge of which would have clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of ADA, personnel matters, and matters which by law are required to be confidential, matters involving consideration of government records that are not required to be disclosed under the Alaska Public Records Act, as well as matters subject to attorney-client privilege. Each of these matters in executive session are supported by the Open Meetings Act, Alaska Statute 44-62-310C, 1, 3, and 4.
Is there a second?
This is Albert. I'll second.
All right. Amy, would you pull the board?
Commissioner Candy?
Yes.
Commissioner Crum? Bill Kendig?
Yes.
Mr. Fogel?
Yes.
Mr. Ellich?
Yes.
Mr. Vivamore?
Yes.
Chair Cruz?
Yes.
Beautiful.
everyone. We're in a meeting. We're going to come back into our regular session, and I will make the statement that the public, that the board has not taken any actions on the matters discussed while the executive session, and the session is limited to a discussion of matters directly protected by public disclosures of the Open Meetings Act. That brings us to item number 7 on our agenda, director's comments. Randy?
Thank you, Chair. Just some quick updates for the Chair and the members. I visited Casa View and the Red Dog Mine with the subsistence work group on the Ambler Road and the Workforce Development Group. We toured the mine and then held our meetings in Casa View. Very positive experience. Lots of firsthand ability to see what happens at Red Dog and how well that mine's run, and lots of interest from the members in workforce development, getting people to work, particularly younger people who might otherwise move away from a community without work. So there was a comment made by one elder that, you know, it's not, is the mine going to hurt our culture and our subsistence? Is it was what happens to our culture and subsistence without the mines and without the jobs. And I thought that, so it's a balance. It's not a binary choice, one or the other. It's a balance. And overall, seeing the mine was very positive for everyone. Several, you know, members had relatives that were working there while they were there. So really good for everyone to see the value, you know, of the mine, how clean the mine is run. We got on the road and toured that, saw 5 bears in an hour and a half, and these were not small ones. One was right by our bus, so it was interesting. It was good to see, and you know, one main thing that we're going to get is the ability to understand all the protocols that's been developed at Red Dog over 4 years, you know, for workforce development and for managing wildlife with the road. We don't have to start from scratch. You know, I think we're going to be able to start from an advanced, you know, stage of experience and development. And a member of tech is going to help us, you know, so we don't have to start from zero. So very positive trip.
Okay.
McCushion, Chair and members, geothermal project update. We continue to work through the review of the resource with Geothermix. Geothermix's lead has been given permission by me to speak directly to the lead for the project proponent. They're a professor who's working on that issue as well, and hopefully they're going to reach agreement on all the status of the resource and be able to issue a report that, you know, isn't disagreed with by either side, but both of them agree the resource is present and can sustain the project. So we should have that in the next 2 weeks. And then the fiscal modeling and the tax credit review continues due diligence on that project. That's what I have there, Chair.
All right. And then we've got Ada and interest rates, Tiffany.
Good afternoon, Chair and board members. I'm Tiffany Jansen, the Chief Lending Officer, and just wanted to give a brief overview of interest rates and see if you have any questions or if you'd like some further information. We're coming up on that time of the year where we're going to be setting our floor interest rate for the next fiscal year. We do that at the end of each fiscal year. Our floor cannot go below the 5-year return of our investments, and so we will use that as a guide. And this is statutorily and regulatory-based. So it's based off the Federal Home Loan Bank of Des Moines, and then we add our cost of funds. And finance computes that each fiscal year. So we'll take that plus the cost of funds and make sure that it's above our 5-year average return. Is there any questions about that? And it does change weekly. So we change it every Monday. 5.7 for 20 years, 5.69 for 25. That's everything in. Mm-hmm. All in. And
split between traditional banks.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, great question. So right now, this week, we are seeing the banks averaging about 9.5.
So is that going to put more pressure pressure on us in terms of feedback. You know, sometimes there's feedback about data being competitive, and that kind of elevates that.
I think our response, even if it does, I think our response would be the same as it's always been.
Turn on your mic, please.
I think if there is some pushback from it, our response should be the same as it's always been.
And what I would respond to that is a lot of the deals that we are looking at are tenant-based, and if our rate was to raise in any significant way, the deals would no longer pencil. Our turn and rate are needed in order to make this development happen.
All right, so this is not opinion, just observations. So our rate is even covered in inflation. And what that tells me, if they're at 9 or 10%, that means that all the projects that come to the fund will be asked to do 90% of it. Because it's so much less amount of money, and the fact that it's fixed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think that plays into some of the bank's issues itself. And I guess when we have a workshop, whatever, I'd be curious about why the Des Moines Home Bank or whatever, and versus what other institutions similar to ADA, what do they use as their benchmarks in financing for setting their interest rates? Anyway, all that being said, is the intake, is there a lot of activity as far as people looking to?
Yes. We are getting many different projects coming in right now. So over the last couple of months, there's definitely been a large intake, pre-flights, applications, you name it.
And the reason being is because the interest rates are so high.
I think over the last several months, things had died down as the interest rates were quite high. Even ours were above 6%. And so it didn't make the deals pencil. When you have these tenants coming in, especially large tenants, they're only going to push that price per square foot so far. And it was just pushing it to where it didn't make it pencil for the developer or the tenant. So now that has kind of stabilized, it's gone down a little bit more. Prices for acquisitions have stabilized, as you've seen some of the prices dropping in the market. That's made it more attractive for developers and tenants to come in and actually make these deals pencil. So we are seeing that, and I would say overall, because of the situation with rates and prices, we're also seeing the larger deals, right? We're not seeing the $300,000 to $500,000 deals. We're seeing more of the $1-3 million deals that need to happen regardless of the environment. So then it's just about how can you make it work. I mean, they've already built the project, so they've got to find some long-term financing for it.
That doesn't affect your decision.
I'm sorry?
I assume that just because it's already been built doesn't affect whether or not...
No, on their side, I mean, they need to find financing because they've already built the project. So for them, it's already up. They got to get out of their construction.
They didn't have takeout financing. They built it. Pocket or something like that?
Possibly, yes. You've got some large developers that are going to go through it regardless because they've got some deep pockets, but then they don't want to hold it. The construction financing, they've got to pay off in some way, shape, or form within 18 months typically, and so they don't want to. It's cheaper for them to get long-term debt, right? Cash is king, and to be able to keep their cash if they're able to float a 25-year deal at a 6%.
So obviously what goes up probably will come down.
Mm-hmm.
Interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
So the deals that you guys are putting together today and get to the finish line, I guess under $3 million, we don't see that at the board.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen when in 2 years or 3 years the interest rates are down 5 to 6% at the bank, and now the bank has deployed their money at 9% on a 25-year note or whatever, a 20-year note, and they're getting paid back, and now their customer wants to come in and refinance it. And the bank's not happy.
So
not necessarily.
Most majority.
They have to go through the bank to refinance, right?
Bill, that's a good point. On the side of the bank, they typically are only fixing for 3 to 5 years at a time. Sometimes only 1 year at a time, which means it's a variable rate loan on their side, so they just automatically readjust.
I'm talking about the loan itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
typically, how long is the bank in a loan, a 20-year loan?
They're probably in a 15 to 20-year term that's adjusting every 3 to 5 years.
Okay. So what I'm getting at is that it's not the adjustment part. It's that they want to refinance the whole loan to get the interest rates down.
They could if they don't like where the variable rate is at and they want to fix it for a larger portion of the note. But some banks have some rules about in-house refinances, and then you get into do they go to a different bank.
Not the banks. It's us. Our rates are going to go down when the interest rates go down. The borrower is going to look at that and say, we have a 20-year note, a 25-year note. Oh, Ada's interest rate is 2% less now. Let's go refinance it. Now, the bank is going to say, well, wait a minute. We deployed our money based on this over 20 years. That's what we expect. Are they? I assume they're not going to be happy about having to refinance something because their customer wants to, which why would you? I'd be right there doing it. So what are your thoughts on that? How does that play into the process?
Part of our application process, and that's a great question, Chair. A part of our application process with any loan is this: we ask, is this project contingent upon ADA's financing? With a refinance, we don't just do a straight refinance for the purpose of reducing the interest rate. There has to be a reason what we're doing that for. Are they using that that stabilized cash flow to expand their business? Are they doing renovations? What are we doing with that? What we don't want to do is what you're saying, which is just to reduce it for the cost change.
So basically you're saying you're not doing just a rate and term, but you will do consider a cash out.
So we'll look at doing a refinance. It's not necessarily a cash out, but because they want to have a decreased payment to use those funds towards something else, right? So we ask what the justification of the refinance is. And they do have the opportunity to buy it down per regulation, and it's a 1% fee. But again, we look for the justification of that. It has to be more than just, well, the rate is low and I want a lower payment. So there has to be a reason behind that.
That 1% fee, can they finance that in, or do they have to?
No, that's paid.
That's paid up.
Yeah.
Okay, but again, I'm going back to the banks deployed money over 15 or 20 years. They're not like ADA. They don't, you know, so they're anticipating those rates of returns on that money. And in 10 years, the interest rates are all changed, and so they.
Correct.
So you come in and say, well, I want to refinance it. I'm going to take the money and I'm going to go invest it over here. Anybody can say that. I mean, do they have to have the project going or finished before you can refinance them? Or how do you follow up to make sure that they do what they say they're going to do if they want to refinance?
With the funds?
Yeah.
Lender certification. The lender has to provide a certification as part of our commitment package and as part of loan funding that they're ensuring the funds were used for specific things. So we have tied refinances to that before, where the lender has certified that this is going to be used for an Alaskan project. There are certain things that we put in there, but it's a lender certification because ADA can't monitor it, right? We don't have typically direct contact with the borrower, and we're not monitoring. We don't have the facilities to monitor a loan like a construction or anything like that. So the bank does that for us, but we do a lender certification.
On refinances?
On anything where we are asking where these funds are going to be used for and to ensure that the reason that we've given is followed. So
I mean,
it could be for a variety of things.
That's where I see the criticism from the banks, the challenges is that they've deployed their capital, and now they have to redeploy it at a lesser rate. They're not going to like that. That's not new loans. I'm talking about refinance loans. And I would ask that you guys take a look at that and maybe talk with the banks about a program that addresses that, because it's a double-edged sword. You know, I'm not saying that's a bad thing or a good thing. As a borrower myself, I'll refinance every day.
You benefit from it.
You know, to free up cash flow to make additional investments.
Mm-hmm.
But the banks are our partners, not the customers.
Correct.
So that's why we want to make sure we're in tune with that.
Absolutely.
Chairman, if you look at our loan dashboard, it's not like we're going gangbusters with writing new loans. We're barely getting as many new loans as are paying off.
And one thing I'd like to bring forward, you know, the staff and the members of the board that are never going to be asking for credit
on the work that they did on behalf of Alaskans. But, you know, I was really able to see that firsthand during COVID and the amount of time and effort Chairman Fogel participated in and the members of the team that are still here with ADA. But, you know, trying to rework those loans to make those businesses in Alaska hang in there, and I think was really a heroic effort, and I just appreciated that process. And the ADA was able to be there during that really challenging time. And Tiffany, I love this presentation because I think it's a really, it's a great reminder and also good for us to get on the record, you know, what our processes are. First, you know, folks that may not normally be exposed to ADA or what the process would be to be able to access these funds. So I think it's really great to just outline the process of, you know, we take the 5-year average, that it's the Des Moines Index?
Federal Home Loan Bank of Des Moines.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, as you can tell, Tiffany, the way I ask questions to start the conversation, to get the information out. That's kind of, I would take the other side of my own personal opinion to, you know, with the advocates and the pros and the cons to try to get it out.
Absolutely. Both sides of the conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to get it on the record so it's to discuss, quite, you know, for the public to know. But my last question is there anything in the loan documents that you guys put that clarifies how a refinance could come about? Or is it just regulation and statute?
It's just regulation and statute. There's nothing that I have seen, I'm trying to think in boilerplate language in the loan documents, that would specifically address refinances. But it is something, since I've been here, that we've asked for a justification of refinances.
So would it make sense, because as a borrower, I would never know what your statutes or your regulations are, to put something in the documents that spells out on an origination, a brand new loan,
mm-hmm.
that kind of spells out for the borrower that, you know, if a refinance is in the future, which typically in 20, 25 year notes that happens, I would think that, you know, so there's no misunderstanding. Here's what happens. Does that make sense?
We can take a look at that. The loan documents are originator-based, so they're not ADA loan documents. We have a participation certificate with the lender, but we do not actually draft the borrower's documents. So that would be something that we communicate with the lenders individually and see if there's something that they would like to put in there. We can make it always a condition, but again, it's something that they communicate with the lenders.
My goal is just to inform the borrower.
But isn't that component that Tiffany was just talking about, that says there has to be a reason for the refi, isn't that our rule, or is that the bank?
That is our rule. That is not the bank's. It is not regulation. It's something that we have asked so that we can make sure we're addressing the bank's concerns on refinances. And so we've asked the question as to what the refinance is for. Because if the loan is able to be done at the market rate, we would prefer the market take care of the loan. But if we are wanting to participate in that loan because there's further development that's going to result of that refinance, that cash flow can be used for some sort of Alaskan development or creation or retention of jobs, then that's what we'd like to deploy that with. But that's why we ask for the justification.
So what you just told me is that in 5 years that could change.
In 5 years, the rate could change?
No, the requirement to refinance could change because it's just something that's not a regulation.
It is not a regulation, that's correct.
I would ask that, you know, I'm about transparency in the borrower knowing what the options are. You guys should figure out something that maybe it's a one-page deal that, you know, I'm sure you're signing all of our stuff that spells out something that's part of the loan document.
Absolutely, and we regularly issue policies. It's something we could look at as issuing a policy.
That's all. I mean,
okay.
You don't have to change anything, just so that it's spelled
out there. No, definitely put it out there. And we do have a record of updating our policies and putting them on the website. So they're on the loan participation page of the website. And we send them to all the lenders as well when we do them. But that is something we could make an official policy and put it out there.
Yeah, I just didn't have the borrower acknowledge it. And a sheet of paper.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. Like a job certification. We could have them do that. Yes. Okay.
When the loan origination, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That would be simple for us to put together.
Okay. Any further questions?
How are we, if you don't, are we going into the loan dashboard too?
Yeah, that's on there.
You said
a loan dashboard.
Sounds great. You mentioned that you're seeing a lot of large loan applications are coming through. I don't think that that's translated to any actually coming to the board to review since it's under $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
So are the big ones just not penciling out, or why are they still in progress? We really haven't seen much come the way of loan dashboards. I've been kind of concerned about this for several months now, mm-hmm. about where we're slowly, like, lowering our loan portfolio. We're still hovering around, you know, 400,000, and we've had that, I want to say, for about a year now.
That's correct. We experienced many more payoffs, several years of the payoffs in 1 year last year with the increased hot real estate market. People were selling at high prices, and we were getting many payoffs. We have stabilized it, even though we've had a couple of payoffs each month. We have been able to put enough on the board to where it hasn't gone down. The last few months, we've stabilized it. We are reaching towards going further. We do have a few loans on here. Everything is under three right now. But I have several pre-flights that are above the board amount, but they're going through their process of development, because once it hits pre-flight, if we give them a green light, then they have to go back and complete the appraisal, complete the environmental. That can take a few months, and then we'll bring it back to board. So we do have several things coming up, and then in the larger pipeline, because we instituted, if the board remembers last year, we did a federal risk mitigation strategy. Anything that's $10 million or above comes to the board as a full application, right? There's not a pre-flight process anymore. So we do have a couple of those that have to come complete as a loan application. So that means they're really getting all the bells and whistles done. And when you're talking about a very large project, that can take several months to put together. So we do have a few that are up in that level, and then we have some others in the board level that just haven't quite gotten to the part where they're ready to ask for funding. And as far as getting these put on, a commitment time frame is 6 months for an existing building. It's 12 months for a new construction. So even if we approve something, like right now, let's say we approve something this week, it won't go to actually fund until the end of October. So there's a big lead time and things attaching themselves to the portfolio that you're not going to see right away. So we are working on that, but we are getting definitely a lot of things coming through, and we're moving them as quick as we possibly can. But those larger deals do take some time. And so we've got some on the pre-flight list. I think we sent that last time. And there are some that are board level. They just haven't reached the part where they're ready to come completely to the board. On the borrower side, they're holding on.
One thing that comes to my mind is, you know, with a 5.67% rate versus mm-hmm. 9, it mm-hmm. tells me that either the banks aren't promoting this program and they're only wanting it for themselves, or people just don't know about this program. Because you would think there would be a rush of people coming to save 90% of their mm-hmm. loan that much.
Well, there's more places besides the banks. Banks take percentages of,
yeah.
you know, there's other places for you know, capital.
Yeah.
You know, there's pensions, and just depends on the size, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Are you continuing to meet with the banks on a regular basis? And
absolutely.
And
in fact, we have a loan going to investment committee this week that is from a bank that has not used us in over 20 years.
Nice.
So I've worked really hard at trying to have the other banks participate, realize that a lot of people at those banks have never used the program. They've been on the list for a long time, but nobody working there has actually used the ADA program. So getting them knowledgeable of the program, excited about the program, and being willing to go with the time frame. Some of the times, if it's an acquisition, right now I thought that we would get a large application coming in, but people got bridge financing because it's an acquisition. So then that buys them some time before they have to come see us. So we do have things in the pipeline, but those larger things take time to develop. And if they were time sensitive on the front end with a purchase, they now have lots of time on the back end before they need to come to us. So that's kind of what's going on right now. But yeah, we will see some more things, lots more things coming through. We're running through them weekly.
Good.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
All right.
that brings us to our next meeting is August 2nd. Are we up second again on that day, Randy? Okay. Item number 8 is board comments. See if Bill's away. Is Bill on there? Is he...
Yes, sir.
All right. I'm impressed, Bill. You have any comments before we adjourn?
No, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Well, sorry to miss that flight. Was delayed 3 hours, whatever the day. But
yes,
we hope to see you at a work session whenever that's scheduled.
I'll be there. Thank you.
Can't miss his flight when we go to Fairbanks.
Yeah, that's right. There we go. No, if he says he has a flat tire, we're going to say, wait a minute here.
No excuses. I'll be there.
Yeah. Thanks. All right. Further board comments. No. Or Randy, I'll make the comment. Thank you again. And Randy, thank you. Appreciate everything. And it's looking forward to setting the date for the work session. Yeah. If anything you need, let me know. With that, I'll take a motion.
Move to adjourn.
This is Albert. I'll second.